reconvene. Ms. Hill, are you?
Yes, thank you, Commissioners. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Doubt of my own manhood struck down one of our experts today. So I'll do my best. Have you all had the opportunity to have a read of the submissions lodged?
Yes.
Well, since they've been lodged really recently, I'll take the opportunity to take you through them anyway, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
But feel a bit free to interject if you have questions as well. So, also at the beginning, just to clarify that the purpose of these submissions today is twofold, really. To firstly clarify what relief that we're seeking through the heritage chapter, and secondly, to provide a bit of an overview of the case which has gone so far and also which we see coming up through the proposed district plan hearings. So these submissions are presented on behalf of DJ and EJ Castles, the Bulling family, the Bennett family, and M Lynch, and also the Friends of Wakatipu Gardens and Reserves. The submitters were included in the submitter list for hearing string 03 due to the relief sought through the heritage chapter for the area bounded by Park Street, Franklin Road and Hobart Street, so the box that we're referring to in the rest of these submissions as the special character area. My section 2 there is really for the benefit of those commissioners who were not present in the strategic hearings. So nothing is new in this section 2, but it provides a bit of an overview of what we've put down so far. And in addition to these points that I'm about to read out, I'll also invite you to perhaps have a look over the original submissions, lodged legal submissions, in support of the strategic hearing chapters. So firstly, the special character area has important residential heritage values and exhibits special character which warrants a level of recognition and protection beyond that provided through the medium density residential chapter. The distinctive character of the area is driven by the combination of small scale residential homes that have grown organically since the area was first settled in the 1870s. In combination, low story heights, small masses, and naturally offset footprints and boundaries, the built character of the Park and Brisbane Street areas reflects a lengthy development heritage that has almost vanished elsewhere in Queenstown. The special character area holds a distinctive residential character, built on its surviving historic heritage that ultimately generates a strong sense of place for many of the residents who live there and call Queenstown their home. The important heritage values of the area should be better protected, both at the strategic level of the plan, by acknowledging generally of the worth of those values, and at the operational level, by providing residential provisions that give appropriate weight to protection of those values and character. The Friends of the Wakatipu Gardens and Reserves is the preeminent community representative group that acts as a voice for the Wakatipu Gardens and Reserves areas. The PDP should provide for protection of its built environment as well as its natural environment, so that sound planning outcomes are achieved across all rural, residential, and other living zone chapters of the plan. Quality urban design and built form are relevant factors to be provided for through Part 2 of the Act. And my last point there is was talked about a bit more length in the strategic direction chapter, but really it's about looking at the proposed plan as a whole and its component stages, stage 1 and 2. And I guess presenting an overall concern of the submitters that perhaps some important aspects which range across the district, such as infrastructure and parking or traffic concerns, have not been notified at the same time as the densification chapters, such as the residential chapters in stage 1. So there at 2.3a, I provide an overview of the purpose, really, that the submitters sought wide relief in their original submissions to achieve the intended objective of appropriate recognition and protection of the area of special character through the PDP. And at the time that we made these original submissions, it was not anticipated how the hearings would be run. And since that time, it's eventuated that the hearings have been split into quite discrete topics, or according to chapters in some cases. And that's left us really in a position where we have to decide at which point we're going to bring our full army, I guess, our full suite of evidence. The pockets aren't endless, so we've decided that we will bring the majority of our evidence in the residential hearing chapters upcoming. So as you'll see, I don't have experts with me today. Now, section three is really acknowledging that there are a couple of options to pursue our objective through the proposed district plan. Whilst our original submission sought the recognition of a special character area as an overlay within Chapter 26, and it's acknowledged in the Section 42A report that that isn't a recognised feature in the structure of Chapter 26 at the moment, we acknowledge that, and for the reasons stated in the submission that I'm about to go through in more detail, we recognise that perhaps another alternative way of providing for that relief will be through carve-out provisions or special provisions within the residential chapters themselves. Section 4 of these submissions are twofold, really. Firstly, they outline the structure, the high-level structure of the proposed plan, to show, in one sense, where we see a bit of a gap in the policy framework, but also to show that already there's an existing skeleton upon which we can hang our hat for the objectives that we're seeking. So you'll see there goal 3.2.3 of the PPP states a quality built environment taking into account the character of individual communities. And the objective which sits underneath that then states development is sympathetic to the district's cultural heritage values. Now, the relief that we sought in the stream one was to identify further policy that sits under those objectives and that goal, to identify special character and heritage areas and ensure they are protected from inappropriate development. That policy has not been accepted in the Council's right to reply for hearing stream 01B, and we still contend that that presents a gap in that policy framework under Goal 3.2.3. Goal 3.2.3 seems to provide an overarching desired environmental outcome, which is broader than just historic heritage. It seeks to achieve an outcome of character and individualism, which identifies communities. Lower order chapters do not seem to provide for this goal either, as evidenced by the heritage chapter, which is predicated on the historic heritage definition in Section 2 of the RMA, rather than a broader notion of character. And I'm going to refer to that a little bit more in my next section. And there was a question from Commissioner Nixon, I think, yesterday about the purpose or the status of goals. And so I've just referred here at paragraph 4.6 that it's acknowledged that the intent of Council is that goals will not have a regulatory effect in the proposed plan. However, it is submitted that they must serve some legitimate purpose as a desired end state of affairs or environmental outcome. At the residential hearings yet to come, the submitters intend to further show that its special character areas will fit well within the plan, providing the skeleton policy framework already. Excuse me. My next section 5 really provides an overview of the two sections which reside in part 2 of the Act. First being Section 6F, Historic Heritage, and the second being Section 7A, relating to amenity values. Section 7, amenity values. If that's an error reference there, sorry.
I know that you've referred us there to the New Zealand Heavy Water Association case and the council, but I think, to be fair, that situation was dealing with large areas of homogenous development, if you like, of certain eras, which is quite a different circumstance from what the area up there is. The film advised that when we were doing our site visits last week, we walked around all the streets in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So we're familiar with what is there, and I just think that it would be probably probably too long ago to say that the heavy water one is analogous with this situation.
Right.
Quite different.
Yes, I think although I have used that word analogous, I think perhaps the intent of putting this case before the commissioners today is to show that residential amenity values can be provided for and do serve a legitimate purpose under Part 2 of the Act, and that what we're talking about here isn't necessarily just restricted to historic heritage. So I guess I'm presenting an overall picture about where in the proposed plan our objective of providing for an area of special character might better fit than Chapter 26, which is predicated on historic heritage. And I acknowledge that perhaps the Isthmus section of Auckland City Council is slightly different to the two blocks beside the gardens in Queenstown. However, I think there are similarities in that, if I recall in this case, there were in some instances differing degrees of the era of which some houses were built and the degree of changes or modification which some of those houses had undergone as well. Although I agree, you know, it is a bit of a different geographical comparison. And once again, I think that's something which really can be teased out a lot further once we bring, as I've said, our full suite of historic and planning evidence in the residential areas.
I think a better analogy, although it's not a heritage area, would be the consistency of architectural design in Lake Hayes would be more similar for Lake Hayes Estate. Would be more similar to the sort of consistency of architectural design in the areas that the Auckland Isthmus Plan was dealing with. They were the entire suburbs built at the same time, within the same few years, whereas the area over there has a number of houses that were built clearly in the very earliest part of Queenstown's development, and some of them built in the last 5 years.
Yes, oh, well, that's useful. Thank you, sir. I'll look into that as another comparison for the future hearings. I think the point still stands.
Well, I think
what we're
beginning to, which I think is correct, is that it probably is something for the residential stream more than the heritage stream.
That's exactly right, yes. Mm. And it's talking about how we can recognise and provide for Section 7 matters as well.
Mm.
And that has, in the court system before, being seen as a legitimate purpose. Yeah. So perhaps then I don't need to trawl through these extracts from the case. You seem to be relatively familiar with how that case was traversed.
Mm, yes. Well, I was going to say that we could probably, unless my fellow commissioners had other questions, say that in reality, by coming to the residential stream with a more complete analysis of paragraph 2.1b and how the rules in the district plan could deal with the issues of particular amenity and special character would be more helpful, or most helpful, probably, for us.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the intent of our case, really. And today is, as I said, twofold: to provide clarification for our relief sought in Chapter 26 and to give you a taste for what's coming up, I guess. Okay. And so I'll just, I think the conclusion really hits home a bit more about that 2.1b as well, so I'll just read that out for your benefit too, if that's okay. And that's to finish off and say that Queenstown is recognised as an international tourist destination and has been the focus of much recent commercial and investment development. It, however, increasingly lacks a sense of place and has struggled to retain its built heritage that is a fundamental part of its story. The special character area adjacent to the gardens still retains some of that heritage built fabric. This provides a strong sense of place for its residents and those who pass through. Residents and visitors are able to benefit from and enjoy the ambience and environmental amenity that the heritage character of the residential area brings. No area can or should remain static. As the Park Street box have demonstrated itself, but retaining areas within an identifiable character and broader heritage value is essential if Queenstown is to have any story to tell in the future.
Questions? Oh, just a couple of quick things. I take on board say that it's not necessary for an area to have character that all the buildings look the same in sort of a cookie cutter type of way, but they could look different. But there needs to be, I guess, a unifying feature somewhere along the line. It may be the scale of the buildings, it may be the scale of the building combination with the presence of street trees or some parts of Christchurch, and special amenity areas. You may or may not be familiar with Sam's, which have those sort of features to them. But as I say, looking around, it did seem a rather eclectic neighbourhood when we walked around it. So I think I agree with the chairman that I think it's a case of identifying what is some kind of unifying or common feature of that area and identifying that. My only other question is going to be, I assume, with your reference to PC 163 in Auckland, that if that were to be given effect to, you'd be looking at presumably some form of rules, which might include things like resource consents for the removal of any pre-1940 houses, for example, or external alterations to existing buildings, or greater restrictions on non-residential activities, or bulk and location height standards. Is that the sort of thing where you're really heading in that direction?
Well, those were in that plan change case, those were the sorts of provisions which were appropriate on those facts. And so I think something akin to those might be relevant, but we intend to bring planning evidence to the residential chapter to provide those sorts of provisions. And I think, as you touched on, a really finding and agreeing on those special characteristics first is important to then set the scene for those rules, so the rules can provide for those characteristics. But those sorts of things, yes, would definitely the nature of the regulations that we'll be looking at.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
So you can see what we're talking about. I'm Carl Barkley. I'm an engineer by trade. I've been interested in the Kempton Flora for many years and very concerned that at this present time the council's got it to a stage where it's going to be removed off their heritage register, or has been removed off their heritage register, which now allows it to be purchased and removed from the district. The Kingston Flyer Railway was established in 1878 and run to the head of Lake Wakatip at Kingston, where people traversed across the lake via steam vessels. And presently we've got the Earnslaw out there, which is over 100 years old, and that's part of the Kingston Flyer Railway. It was built by the New Zealand Railways and built in Dunedin and carried up to Kingston by the railway. The railway is it's been here since 71 as it is as the Kingston Flyer. It was set up by the New Zealand Railways, government railways back then, as a tourist attraction. It was set up in 71, which was the end of the steam era in New Zealand, as the railways were getting rid of steam and bringing in diesel locomotives. They felt at the time that there was an opening here for a heritage railway, and it had been successful up to probably 12 years ago. Once the railways got out of it and they didn't have somebody there with money that could put into it to keep it running, it slowly wound down and wound down, and presently it's up for sale again due to the owner walking away from it. He states his health, but health is not the only reason. I tried back in 2009 to establish it as a heritage trust, and I had a pledge thing going around New Zealand, mainly around Otago. I raised $55,000 on my own, so there is a huge following out there for this railway. Unfortunately, things were going along quite good, and I almost had it secured. The receivers at the time told me to put another offer on it, but prior to that, we'd had a Christchurch earthquake, a Pike River mine disaster, and fundraising died with 29 men in Pike. So they kept saying, put in another offer, and I said, well, I can't tell you where the money's coming from because fundraising has stopped. It's all going to these two major events in New Zealand. And then along come the third Pike, third disaster with the second Christchurch earthquake. Then along came David Bryce, and he bought it, and he said he was going to do this and he was going to do that, and he was going to set it up in perpetuity that it would stay there forever and a day. He poured some money into it and got it running again. And lots of us told him that it wasn't just a toy, that you could put a bit of money into it and make it work. It needs serious consideration of what needs to be done to it to make it into a successful tourist attraction. I've done some figures in recent times. I want to set it up as a charitable trust is what I want to do. And in recent times I sat down and worked out why, in 2009 I sat down and worked out why has it failed? Why have people not put the money into it that's required to make it into a tourist attraction? And there's several things. One thing, it sits at the other end of the lake, away from Queenstown. It's only half an hour's drive away. What I want to do is have some bus services running from here on the main street of Shotover, going through to Kingston, dropping them off to the train, they do the activity and then they come back again. Much like AJ Hackett's Shotover Jet, sign-written buses taking you to right back in Heritage. Long term, I've got a couple of people looking at putting some boats on the lake that could tie up with the Kingston Flora. The Earnshaw is too far for it to travel on a daily basis, but we could probably do a once a month or three times a year, sort of make it a big event with the steamboat and the train. There's lots of tourists worldwide, not so much just visitor tourists, there's rail heritage tourists from all over the world that come to New Zealand. And when it was running, Tory Gorge talked to me quite often, and they were quite keen to help us, that they had bookings coming in all the time, but because of the way people run it, it was always broken down or back on the market. So it was never marketed to its full potential as a tourist attraction as far as that goes. The other thing I want to do is run it from Fairlight down to the lake and make the lake the destination. So it's actually sitting out on the main road where people can see it. Sitting down to the lake, nobody knows it's there, but the lake is a really good destination. And by having it, it feel like we pick up the travellers going past by a bus to the Milford Sound or further south, and also all the itinerant ones that go past and would stop and go for a ride. But as it presently set up, they stop there and want to go for a ride, but they get told to go to Kingston because that's where it starts from, and they're at Fairlight. They want to start from that end. Nobody's ever sat down and worked out why these problems are with the thing. It's all about marketing at the end of the day. Any successful business, it comes down to marketing. I've worked on some figures. Queenstown, they talk us that there's 2 million tourists coming here annually. Well, if we take 5% of that 2 million, it's 100,000 people. If I get 5% to go on the train, that's at $45 a head. That's $4.5 million turnover. And then we sell them some food, drink and souvenirs, we can double that money. So it's quite capable of making better money than it's ever made in its life. It's the best it's ever done in Russell's day was 22,000 people on it. So you're working on about 900,000 back then. As I say, it's got to be marketed on the main street of Queenstown. People are going to be picked up from their hotel or motel or down town when they do a booking and taken to the train and brought back again. 90% of the tourists that arrive in Queenstown arrive by bus or plane. They've got no transport of their own. They're walking up down the main street of Queenstown looking for something to do. The train's got to be out front of people, it's got to be promoted, it's got to be posted. Every hotel you go into, you see the urns for. Every hotel room you go into, I want to see a poster of the Kingston Bar on there and telling people to ride back in history. At the present time, we're supposed to be having a winter festival starting this week, and the hills are looking very bare. My train can run all year round. Snow's not an issue. They say, oh, the tracks might get blocked and it won't move. Well, back in the 20s, it did do that. It was 6 feet of snow out there. But nowadays, I can get a couple of diggers in from either end, and within a couple of days, we'd have it cleared and it'd be going again. So snow's not an issue. Snow's great as far as I'm concerned, because in the wintertime, we haven't got all the summertime activities to compete against, so I've got a plus there. I can run the train at night time, so when the people are finished on the mountain and want a romantic meal on a steam train in the snow and all the steam and the lights, there's another plus. A lot of photographers like to see a steam train running in the snow, so there's another plus. It's not a fire risk in the wintertime as much as it is in the summertime, so it's another plus. So there's lots of ways of getting these 100,000 people to ride on it. The first thing is it's got to run all year round. It's got to have two new boilers so it's reliable, and we need some sheds to house it in. I urge the Queensland Lakes District Council to reinstate it back onto its heritage register and to accept that its values as a heritage venue and machinery. They talk in these reports of heritage being transport. That's what it is. It's transport. It adds historic and social values to Kingston, and it can add social values to Queensland as well, as far as providing jobs, as I say, to get people there and to and fro. If people go to Kingston and ride on this train and it takes half a day, that means they end up having to stay in Queenstown another night. So we can end up for 100,000 more bed nights in Queenstown annually because of this train. People come to Queenstown, they'll get a taxi out there themselves, so they're adding extra revenue to the town. They'll get rental cars to get out there, so they're adding more revenue to the town. So letting this train go is more than just letting a piece of... They keep telling me it's a mobile heritage and we can't protect mobile heritage because it's movable. Well, the Earnslaw moves on the lake every day and that's protected. They're talking about the crane that's part of the infrastructure at Kingston, a little steam crane, air operated crane for loading up coal. They're saying that's a heritage and it can stay there, but it's all wheels, it can move, but they're quite happy protecting that. Kingston and the Kingston Plier is a steam train with seven carriages that goes up and down the track, goes in and out of the district because it goes to Southland to feel like, and then it comes back to Queenstown and the Kingston end of the track. It has been doing it on that railway. There's been a railway locomotive running up and down that track for 138 years, and the Kingston Flyer itself, it's in its 45th year, so we're 5 years away from its 50th anniversary, which is a significant event in Heritage in New Zealand. Very shortly, Shantytown on the west coast will be hitting its 50th anniversary, and that's a very successful tourist attraction, and that's built around a steam train. I personally know Ian Tibbles, the engineer and manager of the train, and he's due to retire shortly, but he's put his whole life into it since he retired from the railways back in the 70s when they finished with steam. He was in his late 20s when he retired from that. I can't let this council let this locomotive go. I urge the council, if a buyer hasn't been found, that the council actually steps forward and purchases it from David Bryce, and then helps an organisation like ourselves set up a charitable trust to take it over. I've got Give a Little from Spark prepared to get behind us. We've almost had it page up and running, but they came back to me after several times. I know how these guys that bought the beach built. It took a long time to get to a stage where they could buy the beach. They got to a stage where they told me I had to get a signed sales agreement with David Bryce to say that we could purchase it, but he won't deal with me. He doesn't want anything to do with what I'm proposing. So we need another buyer to come along and buy it and then let us set this trust up, or if they've got the money and they're prepared to run with it and make it work, they need serious money, like $3 million to $5 million is what I propose is needed to get it to a successful tourist venture. So I urge the Queenstown Lakes District Council to step up to the plate and reinstate it back on its heritage register. That takes away the chance of it being moved away from the district and puts it back where it belongs as a major heritage identity in the district. And I ask them to also front up with some money to buy it. And at a later date, we would let them be shareholders in our venture. And at a later date, if they want to be out of it and want the money back, we would be prepared to come up with the money and pay them back. We pay them back directly or use that money to fund other heritage activities, restorations within the region.
Mr. Blakely.
So I don't know what much else I can say.
No. That's good, because I was about to tell you, you're straying way beyond what we can deal with. I'll clarify for you that the provisions in the operative district plan, where the Kingston Flyer is protected, are not altered until this district plan becomes operative.
Okay.
There are unlikely to be decisions on this particular provision before August or September 2017.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I can reassure you that the existing situation will survive for some time.
Right.
As for the council financially contributing, we're not in any position to assist with that. Do you have any questions, Commissioner Nixon?
No, I think it's all pretty clear, thank you. I don't have any questions, I'd just like to comment.
Please did you mean that indication that's going to be here for next year, so.
I'd just like to comment, I value your enthusiasm, sir.
Yeah, gives us more chance to come up with somebody else that can help us fund it.
Okay.
Well, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
I'll give you a yell when this is not running.
Mr. Hadley. Apologise for the delay.
That's right. Oops, try and kick everything over. My name is James Willing Peter Headley. I'm a trustee of the Mill House Trust, which owns the property at 549 Speedgrass Flat Road. The Mill House is legally described. My evidence there. The Mill House Trust has owned the property at 509 Speedgrass Flat Road since 2003. I've owned the property with my family from 2003 until 2009. The property is currently tenanted. Through my work as a professional engineer, I've been involved with and have had significant exposure to several heritage projects, and I'm familiar with strengthening building works to preserve heritage values. As such, I have some understanding of heritage issues. of submissions. I have made a further submission regarding Chapter 26 of the proposed district plan. Sorry. Historic heritage in response to Heritage New Zealand original submission. My evidence today should be read in conjunction with my further submission, 1113. My brief evidence today firstly recalls the acknowledgement by submitter 426 Heritage New Zealand HNZ of the error in the submission to the formal withdrawal with the submission regarding 549 Speedgrass Flat Road, and then disagrees with the evidence and recommendations of Mr. Richard Knott for the council. HNZ error. And the evidence from Heather Beauchamp for HNZ of her para 86, it is recorded that the New Zealand Heritage List includes the Wakatipi Flour Mill, but that it does not include the mill house. Ms. Beauchamp states that Heritage New Zealand submission refers to the mill house in error. I confirm that the submission in relation to the mill house is withdrawn. Ms. Beauchamp goes on to state, I support a Category 2 listing for the Wakatipi Flour Mill. Importantly, she is silent on the mill house, clearly determining that no classification or listing of the mill house was warranted. Copies of the relevant evidence sections are attached. Again, at 16.1 of the evidence of Jane O'Day for the HNZ, it is stated that Heritage New Zealand withdraws the submission as it relates to the mill house, PEP Heritage Item 76. Ms. O'Day also takes the trouble to record that the mill house is not part of the New Zealand Heritage List entry. So again, it is reported that the mill house has not previously achieved the threshold for classification and entry onto the New Zealand Heritage List, nor has it achieved the threshold in this current review. Evidence copies are attached for reference. QLDC and Operative District Plan error. At paragraph 5.101, Mr. Richard Knott, the QLDC, states that he has checked the extent of place of 557 Speedgrass Flat Road, Wakatipi Flour Mill Complex, and finds that it is clear that this does not include the mill house. He goes on to state, I have further examined the HNZ list and it does not include mill house as an item. Mr. Knott, at his 5.102, goes on to conclude that it therefore appears that the trustees of the Mill House Trust are correct, and that HNZ have included this property in their submission in error, and also that QLDC have incorrectly made reference to it being on the HNZ list in error in both the ODP and PEP. So it is established by fact that not only has HNZ made an error in their submission, but that QLDC's own expert has confirmed that the Mill House was incorrectly listed in error as a heritage item in the Operative District Plan. Whilst it is pleasing that this error has finally been highlighted and acknowledged as a result of our submission, it is very frustrating that the property has laboured under this error for literally decades and has needlessly been subjected to the costs of delays and controlled activity and restricted discretionary consent triggered by the Council's error in heritage lists. This current submission is further evidence of such delays and costs caused by QLDC's error. Just for any correction, let it be clear that HNZ, and that should say have demonstrated, not just have known, have demonstrated no interest in the mill house, yet as the owners of the property, we are forced to monitor and respond to the issues raised, all because QLDC made an error by including the mill house as a heritage item under the ODP. The counterfactual was simply, had HNZ and QLDC not made the initial area, we would not be here and there would be no classification or suggestions of continuation of an erroneous classification as it is now promoted by Mr. Knott. Put simply, the genesis of the mill house being discussed in any context as a heritage item was solely due to the accidental and erroneous extension of the Wakatipi Flour Mill classification, first by HNZ and then by QLDC. Had these mistakes not been made, there would be no discussion of the mill house as a heritage item at this time. Evidence of Mr. Knott, whilst identifying and acknowledging the previous errors of both HNZ and QLDC, Mr. Knott goes on to take it upon himself to consider the heritage values of the mill house. He bases his assessment on a view from the road and an assessment by Ms. Chantal Syme for the Wakatipi Heritage Trust. The Wakatipi Heritage Trust has no regulatory standing and is not an authority. Does not even appear particularly active. Its last publicly available chairman's report is dated 2013. But more concern is that Mr. Knott has principally relied upon a report prepared by an unqualified party who has clearly entered the trust property illegally and without authority. Ms. Syme issued your report as, and it should be the word A, second year undergraduate history student at the University of Otago. With all due respect to Ms. Simon and her academic talent, she is not a heritage architect and could not reasonably be considered an authority in the same manner as HNZ experts Ms. Byshop and Ms. O'Day, both of whom do not consider that the Millhouse should be included as a listed item. With regard to the report by Ms. Simon, I must record that at no time did the Trust give approval for entry onto the property, and as such, Ms. Simon has completed her report legally. Her report even highlights the lack of professionalism and has incorrectly cites the owner in 2013 as a Susan Margaret Bowles. It also incorrectly references the New Zealand Historic Places Trust number, which has now been confirmed as not applying to the Millhouse. The effect being that the original error of association with the classification of the Wakatipu Flower Mill has unnecessarily and unreasonably propagated heritage issues for the Millhouse, and it is time for that to stop. Speaking as the owners of the property, it is very disappointing to us that our property has been illegally accessed, and that instead of addressing a past wrong, Mr. Knott chooses again to propagate an existing and obvious error on the basis of an unqualified and unprofessional report. Relief sought. On the basis of the evidence of Mr. Knott, Section 42A report by Ms. Jones now recommends retention of the Category 3 listing for item 76, the Millhouse, but removes the HNZ listing. We strongly oppose that recommendation for the following reasons. Firstly, the recommendation is based on the evidence of Mr. Knott, which is shown to have relied upon a report that was prepared by an unqualified party who entered the property illegally and who did not establish the correct property owner to consult. Secondly, the recommendation is a propagation of what is now acknowledged in our previous era of both QEC and HNZ, as stated in the evidence by Mr. Knott. As such, this known continuation of classification by QEC after confirmation of the error would be subject to legal challenge on the basis that such an inclusion was ultra vires. Thirdly, at a common sense level, the Trust has laboured under the unfair and incorrect classification of Millhouse by QEC over so many years. Having had the Trust allegation of the error now confirmed as correct by Council's own experts, the current District Plan Review process is the opportunity for QLDC to recognise the tolerance of the Trust to date and remedy the error and imposition over time by acting swiftly and removing the classification altogether. In closing, I believe that the issues in this matter are very clear, and I ask that the Commissioners take sensible and pragmatic steps to correct the past wrong by removing item 76 Millhouse as an item from the list included in the Section 42A report. Thank you.
Knowing that your work in the district, how familiar are you with the ways of district plans and plan changes?
Oh, I guess I wouldn't say I have an expert knowledge.
So you understand that we can only make decisions based on the submissions that are before us.
I do understand that.
And the submission that was before us is no longer before us. And that the Trust have withdrawn their submission.
Heritage New Zealand withdrawn.
Yes, sorry. I still think of them as historic places, so I have to tell myself that they're Heritage New Zealand, yes. And technically, when they withdrew their submission, your further submission went with it. And so I understand the issue you're raising, that in fact there may be an error in the listing originally, and while we may not have jurisdiction to deal with the removal of that, but I will leave Ms. Jones to check that, whether there are other submissions that create jurisdiction. If we came to the conclusion that you are correct and it should not be listed, we certainly are able to recommend to the Council a variation to do that. So we will, notwithstanding that you may have lost all standing to appear in front of us, we'll consider the matter.
I guess I'm trying to capture the with existing 40, I'm just not sure the sequence of events with the HNZ submission. house trusts, further submission, and then their 42A report, which one's currently live, because we've got a 42A report which responds to the evidence of Mr. Knott.
Well, the 42A report included Mr. Knott's evidence. That, from our point of view, has no more standing than evidence produced by anyone else. So it's merely evidence before us.
Mm.
It's not any position of the council, as in the council who will make the decision based on our recommendations.
So we were set. So what we've done wrong is we should have made our own submission to have it removed.
Yes. In a nutshell.
I've just worked that out.
Yes.
Probably a bit focused on rural and rural residential.
Yes, and you were very helpful. Thank you for that. Very useful submission.
Yeah, could help somewhere. Okay, well, look, I guess what I've done is tried to highlight the issue, and I see that with the work of Richard, in all fairness to Richard, he probably doesn't know the true origins of the original Mokitika Heritage Trust work. So he's found some documentation. So I just don't want to see an error propagated.
Yes. There is. I don't know if you've seen the material that's on the council's inventory in respect of the mill house. Have you seen that?
I had seen Ms. Sykes' report.
And I think that might be based on her report. It probably is the one you've seen that's got the previous certificates of title attached to it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And compliments the upkeep of the property.
Yes. Yeah. Do you have any questions,
Commissioner Nixon? No, it, on the face of it, it seems pretty clear. I guess it puts it over my head whether it is simply erroneously listed. If it is erroneously listed, I think the implications of that are it's quite a comparable situation to the Earnshaw. I don't know.
But we had a submission seeking the removal of the Earnshaw, so...
Yes, question whether, if a listing is invalid, whether...
Mm.
We need to find out about that. Maybe to get legal advice.
Well,
do we need to make separate? Should we make separate legal submission to QLDC on this matter outside of the district?
It's probably too late in this process.
But well,
we,
I mean,
we can certainly consider it. And, we will discuss amongst ourselves whether we need an opinion on that issue. Because it goes back to the ODP, if it was incorrectly listed there on a false premise, then that probably has the same problem.
I guess I'd like to be able to follow it through, because I would like to close it, otherwise it'll sit around again for another year or another district.
Well, certainly the answer would be to write a letter to
the chief executive.
No, or the chief executive, yes, or the manager of planning, one or the other.
Okay.
And just make your point and at least it'll be looked at from both directions that way.
Did you have any questions? No, I mean, during the site visit, notwithstanding that it looked beautiful, it was kind of hard to figure out which was the mill house across the road, the barn, etc.
It was good timing, wasn't it?
It was good
timing. Would you want a couple of minutes with them? I'll adjourn and you can have a couple of minutes discussion with them.
Well, I might. That's okay. Okay. Thank you.
We'll adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.